Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So today, readings from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 17. The chapter is entitled Description of the Vanashram System. Now, I was assigned to start on text 33, but text 32 wasn't covered yesterday, so maybe I just briefly... Should we start with that one? Okay. Agno gura vatmani cha. Sarvabhuteshu mam param.
Sarvabhuteshu mam param.
Apritaktir upashita.
Apritaktir upashita.
Brahma varchashva kalmasa.
Brahma varchashva kalmasa.
Please chant. Apritagde upasita Brahmavarchasya kamasa. Adnogura vatmanacha Sarvabhuteshu mamparam. Apritagde upasita Brahma Varchasya Kama Saha Agno in fire. Guru in the spiritual master. Atmani in oneself. Cha also. Sarvabhuteshu in all living entities. Mam me. Param. The Supreme. Apritakdi. Without any concept of duality. Upashita. One should worship. Brahmabharjasvi. Possessing Vedic enlightenment. Akalmasa. Sinless. Translation and purport by the followers of the Stavangrisa, C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Thus enlightened in Vedic knowledge by service to the spiritual master, freed from all sins and dualities, one should worship me as a super soul, as I appear within fire, the spiritual master, one's own self, and all living entities. Purport. One becomes glorious and enlightened by faithfully serving a bona fide spiritual master who's expert in the Vedic way of life. Thus purified, one never engages in sinful activities, which immediately extinguish the fire of spiritual which immediately extinguish the fire of spiritual enlightenment. Nor does one become foolish and small-minded in trying to exploit material nature for personal sense gratification. A purified human being is apritagdi, or without consciousness of duality. Because he's been trained to observe the Supreme Personality of Godhead within all things. Such sublime consciousness should be systematically taught throughout the world so that human society will become peaceful and sublime. Om Gyana Timananda Shaganandjana Shadakaya Chakshua Umitam Dina Toshmaya Shri Gurudeva Namaha. So just make some real brief comments on this. This translation purport really made me think of Prabhupada. And every morning we sing Guru Mukha Padma Vakya Chitete Koriya Akya Ana Koryo Mane Asa. Make the teachings emanating from the lotus mouth of our spiritual master one with your heart and do not desire anything else. And then the next couplet is Shri Guru Charanarati Nam Ese Uttamagati Ye Prasade Pure Sarva Asa. Attachment to his lotus feet is the best way to make spiritual advancement. His mercy fulfills all desires for spiritual perfection. So Srila Prabhupada said on several occasions that he asked one question of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur. Anybody know what that is? That's right. And matter of fact, on December 9th, 1936, Srila Prabhupada wrote Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, and he said, you know, I'm not a brahmacharya, I'm not a sannyasi, I'm a grahastha. I can't be with you, I can't live in the temple. How can I serve you? So that was the question. And so then on December 13th, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, who was in Puri at that time in a kind of a debilitated physical condition, wrote back, and he said that you can do very well if you can push on this movement in English. It'll be good for you, and it'll be good for those that help you. And then Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur left his body on December 31st, 1936. So it was quite a sequence. And then Prabhupada, as a grahastha, he couldn't really, you know, figure out how this was going to happen, but he took it very seriously, and this is the result. You know, we're here today. So this is the power and potency of the spiritual master's order. Just like Prabhupada was very struck by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary on Bhagavad Gita 2.41, Vivyashyatmika Budhi Ekiha Kuru Nandana Bahu Shaka Yanantashtya Budayo Vivyashyayinam. When he read the commentary, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur said that one should make the order of the spiritual master one with his heart and soul. So this is what Prabhupada did, and it works. You know, this is the essence of the process that Prabhupada's given us, and if we follow it, then results will be there. Okay, so let's move on. Any questions or comments on that one? A lot to cover today. Okay, so 33. So can we do this in unison? Okay. Srinam nirikshanam sparsha samlapa shvela nadikam kanino nitino bhautan agrihasto gritas chajet. Those who are not married, sannyasis, vanaprastas, and brahmacharis should never associate with women by glancing, touching, conversing, joking, or sporting. Neither should they ever associate with any living entity engaged in sexual activities. Purport. Pranina indicates all living entities, whether birds, bees, or human beings. Among most species of life, sexual intercourse is preceded by diverse mating rituals. In human society, all types of entertainment, books, music, films, and all places of amusement, restaurants, shopping centers, resorts, are designed to stimulate the sexual urge and create an aura of romance. One who is not married, before I went to college, there was a book that was assigned. It was called The Hidden Persuaders. It was written by a person by the name of Vance Packard. And it was how the advertising industry manipulates the mind of people primarily through understanding of sexuality and what a driving force that is. One who's not married, a sannyasi, brahmachari, or vanaprastha, should rigidly avoid anything related to sex, and of course should never see any living entity, whether bird, insect, or human, engaging in the various phases of sexual intercourse. When a man jokes with a woman, an intimate, sexually surcharged atmosphere is immediately created, and this should also be avoided, for those aspiring to practice celibacy. Even a householder who becomes attached to such activities will also fall down into the darkness of ignorance. So that we don't have any sannyasis, vanaprasthas, or brahmacharis present. Maybe we have some vanaprasthas, I'm not sure. But the last sentence of this purport, even a householder who becomes attached to such activities will also fall down into the darkness of ignorance. And Ajamil was an example of this. He, Pukka Brahmin, and well-trained, went to Gurukul, was very respectful, very clean, expert with chanting mantras, had all of the kind of the profile of a really good devotee, worshipped Narayan Shila, but, he, this is a kind of case in point, he was, by just seeing a shudra and a prostitute dilly-dallying, in the sexual realm, he lost it. And he really tried to control his mind, but he couldn't. It just kind of awoke these desires that were in his heart. So it's a, and then there's a real downward spiral. He hired the prostitute to be a house servant and kicked his wife out, this very nice Brahmini. And then he used all of his father's inheritance to just enjoy. And then when that ran out, he started mugging people and so many different things. Of course, we know there was a good turnout, a good finale to the story. He was chanting the name of Lord Narayan at the end. And actually, this later in this pastime, Prabhupada explains that this was Gyatu Sukriti based upon his rendering service to the Narayan Shila. And Lord Narayan within his heart, he wasn't thinking of Lord Narayan in those days, but he inspired him to name his son Narayan. And then everyone knows the rest, so I won't go into that. But so this Prabhupada describes this material world as Maitunya, agar, you know, that we're shackled with sex life. This is what kind of binds us to this material world. And maybe I should give a disclaimer before I go any further. This is a brahmachari class. No, I'm kind of joking about that, but it's actually, there's a lot of relevancy to all of us. And I'll get into this more and more. There's a description right at the end of the Rasa Leela. This is the last shloka in the Rasa Leela, chapter 33. And it's quite significant in regards to what we're dealing with today in this verse. Here's a translation. Anyone who faithfully hears or describes the Lord's playful affairs with the young gopis of Vrindavan will attain the Lord's pure devotional service. Thus, he will quickly become sober and conquer lust, the disease of the heart. Whew. Quite a description, huh? So there's later in the purport, if we become attached to this narration, we'll experience the bliss of spiritual love and thus reject the perverted reflection of that love, which is called lust. So it's pram drisva nivartite. This is what can awaken, you know, if one is serious about his Krishna consciousness. So then there's another. Arjuna asked Krishna this question. This is in the end of the third chapter of Bhagavad Gita. What is it that impels someone to perform sinful activities against his will? I mean, he's forced to. You know, it's like, and we see this all over the world, particularly as Kali Yuga progresses. My God, some of the heavy things that people do. It's really amazing. So then Krishna responds, Kama Esha Krodha Esha Rajaguna Samudbhava Mahashano Mahapatma Vidyana Mihavarina. It's lust only, which is born of contact with the mode of passion, later transformed into wrath, which is the all-devouring sinful enemy of this world. Okay, so now we got this, the disease of the heart. Now it's this. Now lust is being described as a sinful enemy of this world. So then in a purport to this is Bhagavad Gita 3:37, Prabhupada gives a really powerful analogy that actually this lust, originally it was love for Krishna, but it got transformed in contact with the material energy. And he uses the analogy of milk in contact with sour tamarind, it's turned into yogurt. So this is what we've got in this situation that we're in. And this this lust turns into wrath, and then the wrath puts us further into illusion. We forget all about the love for Krishna, and this goes on and on, life after life. So this process of Krishna consciousness, we may be in passion, but it allows us to come up, and this is what this section is all about, you know, how we can be elevated to goodness and ultimately to Krishna consciousness. Because this lust, it covers the real knowledge of the living entity. They have no idea. 99.9% of the people in the world, they just don't understand that they're actually servants of Krishna, and that's where they're going to achieve happiness. They're driven, you know, by the consumer culture we live in to try and enjoy in so many different ways, but they're not happy. I was recently hearing a class that Dravida Prabhu was giving in San Diego, and he was describing, he just read this study that was done. This is like a 25-30 year study on college students. They do 200,000 a year. They survey them to see how their emotional health is, and it's quite remarkable, because in this time period, people have become more and more and more disturbed. And, you know, I've been kicking around in this movement for 40 years now, and I've seen an enormous degradation in terms of gender separation. Now they have co-ed dorms, you know, and it's a given, you know, that you just don't have to worry about marriage. You can just go and enjoy. But what comes from that is a tremendous amount of suffering. And also the study indicated that it was that most of the suffering took place, there was a greater degree of emotional disturbance among the girls. And so because they weren't being protected, maybe they, boys and girls, had multiple relationships that end in some type of a trauma, emotional trauma. So there's some real value, you know, to this gender separation, although it may be seen as kind of a form of fanaticism. Oftentimes that's how, you know, people outside maybe see the devotees, or maybe inside. And there's been history, you know, of really going too far with that, where women aren't being properly respected. And, you know, there's this kind of like a aversion because there's an internal attraction. But if we really look at, you know, from our philosophical, from a philosophical standpoint, the level of emphasis that's placed upon controlling our senses in this way, it's very prominent. There's one famous verse. I remember as a brahmachari, I was doing traveling sales kirtan in the Philadelphia temple. This was in the early 80s. And we would come to the temple maybe once a month or something like that. And at that time, Pallottananda Swami was a brahmachari. He was working for BTG. And Dhirudatta and I, we were traveling partners. There were like three or four other devotees in the party, but practically every single class, Pallottananda Swami would quote this verse that I'm about to quote, and we would kind of look at each other and chuckle. But a very, very important verse for all of us, not just brahmacharis or vanaprasthas or sannyasis. Pumsa striya mituni bhavamitam tayor mito ridaya grantimahu atogriha shetra sutapta vitar janasha moho yamahamameti. So the translation is that the attraction between male and female forms a basic principle of material existence. And on the basis of this misconception, one becomes attracted. On the basis of this misconception, it ties together. It ties together the hearts of the male and female. And then one becomes attracted to his body, home, property, children, relatives, and wealth. In this way, one increases life's illusion and thinks in terms of I and mine. I and mine. So this is the whole essence of false ego, this I and mine. But here's Rishabhdev explaining, but it's throughout Prabhupada's books. It begins with this attraction between male and female. This is how, and it expands from there. So I mean, I read some other, this is a real brahmachari class. Here's another, this is from Lord Kapila Dev. The infatuation and bondage which accrue to a man from attachment to any other object is not as complete as that resulting from attachment to a woman or to the fellowship of men who are fond of women. And the next verse, at the sight of his own daughter Brahma, was bewildered by her charms and shamelessly ran up to her in the form of a stag, when she took the form of a hind. And then it goes the other way. A lot of times when there's these really strong statements, you know, about a woman, or then Prabhupada said, you can, for women, they can just insert man in that, you know, you can, that's what's being referred to. Now, this next couple of verses that I'm going to read, and then also what the purporting that Prabhupada gave, substantiates that. not to, I don't know if that's the right way to explain it, but it kind of is a reference to, in that regard. A living entity who, as a result of attachment to a woman in his previous life, has been endowed with the form of a woman, foolishly looks upon Maya in the form of a man, her husband, as a bestower of wealth, progeny, house, and other material assets. A woman, therefore, should consider her husband, her house, and her children to be the arrangement of the external energy of the Lord for her death, just as the sweet singing of the hunter is death for the deer. So in the purport, Prabhupada says, in these instructions of Lord Kapiladeva, he has explained that not only is woman the gateway to hell for man, but man is also the gateway to hell for woman. Okay, so then at the end of this purport, Prabhupada says, as long as either is attached to the other for such material enjoyment, the woman is dangerous for man, and the man is also dangerous for the woman. But if the attachment is transferred to Krishna, both of them become Krishna consciousness, and then marriage is very nice. And the Prabhupada cites Rupa Goswami's Anashaktasha Vishayan Yartarham Ubayunjata Nibandha Krishna Sambande Yukta Vairagyam Uchite. So then Prabhupada says, so this is the Yukta Vairagya. You know, you're not attached to the objects of the senses, but you use everything in Krishna's service, and this is real renunciation. So then, Prabhupada says that the husband and wife should live together in relationship with Krishna only for the purpose of discharging duties in the service of Krishna. Engage the children, engage the wife, engage the husband, all in Krishna's duties. So that's the idea and how it will really be beneficial. Sometimes these restrictions, and particularly what we have, you know, in today's translation, seem really extreme. I mean, Shobari Muni, he was very elevated yogi, and we shouldn't, you know, in the purport, it says we should avoid seeing any living entity engaged in sexual act. I mean, here we have the case of Ajamil, but Shobari Muni, he saw, you know, a big fish copulating. You know, it's not like you wouldn't think that that would stimulate desire in his heart, but and he took on 50 wives, and then at the end of all that, he realized, oh man, what a mistake I made, and then he took vanaprast, and his entire family went back to the spiritual world. So the point is that these restrictions. It sounds a little bit like in the Christian tradition they have mortification of the flesh. Has anybody ever heard that? It's like, I was looking on the internet yesterday, and they actually, during Holy Week, you know, this is just prior to Easter, there's some Christian traditions where they do self-flagellation. You know, they beat themselves on the back with a whip, and they have this whole parade of people with blood coming down their back. You know, it's like, so, you know, what is the purpose of this, you know, of trying to control sex desire? It's described by Prahlad Maharaj, Yan maitunadi grihamedi sukram hituchum, kandu yanena koreori vaduka dukum, chipyanti neha kripana bahuduka bhaja, kandutivan manasitram vishaheta dira. That sex life is compared to the rubbing of two hands together to relieve an itch. Grihamedis, so-called grahastas who have no spiritual knowledge, think this itching is the greatest platform of happiness, although actually it's a source of distress. Those who are sober, however, who tolerate this itching are not subjected to the suffering of the fools and rascals. So that's the way it's seen on the material platform. This is the highest possible pleasure that's available. So then here we are, we're enjoined to restrict this. You know, it's a very prominent part of our philosophy. So when we look at it from the standpoint, there's in the second chapter of first canto, it's It's a really popular, real famous verse. Tapum bir dvijashrishta vanashrama vibhagashaha svanushtitasya dharmasya samsidhir haritoshana. O best among the twice-born, it is therefore concluded that the highest perfection one can achieve by discharging the duties prescribed for one's own occupation according to caste divisions and orders of life is to please the personality of Godhead. So that's this is what, you know, this these Varnashram instructions, they're meant ultimately, if we follow them, is to please Krishna. It's not, you know, self-flagellation. It's not mortification of the flesh. We're trying to please Krishna by our lives and by pleasing him and by coming to the platform of Dira, which involves mode of goodness, then we can enter deeply into Krishna consciousness and experience this taste that we described at the very beginning with this verse at the end of the Rasa Leela. Jamunacharya, the famous verse by him, Yadavadi Mamacheta Krishna Padara Vinde Navanava Rasa Damanu Dittara Tumasit Tadavati Bata Nari Sangame Smaryamane Bhavati Mukha Vikara Shushtu Nishtivanam Cha. Since I've my mind has been engaged in a loving service of Krishna, realizing ever new pleasure in him. Whenever I think of sex pleasure, I spit at the thought, and my lips curl with distaste. So it's not a negative thing, it's just positive, it's so much higher. And then if we don't control this, then then we lose that. We lose that taste. It vanishes. Okay. So now I got some more verses to cover. Any points on? I may have brought up some provocative points. I don't know. So should we have a discussion now, or should I save it until after I finish the next three verses? Okay, nothing now. So we'll just keep going. We can do this. We're on. Okay. We'll chant this in unison. Socham achamanam stanam sanjo pashtir mamacharnam tirta seva japo shrisha bhaktyasyam shpasha varjanam sarvashrama bhayuktayam yama kula dantana madbhava sarvabhuteshu manovakraya samyama. My dear Uddhava, general cleanliness, washing the hands, bathing, performing religious services at sunrise, noon, and sunset, worshipping me, visiting holy places, chanting japa, avoiding that which is untouchable, uneatable, or not to be discussed, and remembering my existence within all living entities as the supersouls. These principles should be followed by all members of society through regulation of the mind, words, and body. It's basically, that's all about coming to the mode of goodness. There's second chapter of first canto, there's another really nice quote. Of the modes, goodness is the best because by the mode of goodness, one can come to realize the absolute truth. It's further comprehended here, this is purport, that one has to rise to the platform of the mode of goodness so that one can be eligible for the devotional service of the Lord. So there's a lot of quotes. There was a really nice paper that Burijan Prabhu once wrote on elevation to goodness, and it's a very significant part of our tradition and the training, and that what the Vanashram system encourages us to do. Okay, so let's move on to 36. This is the last verse. Evam brihad vata daro brahmano nir ivajvalam Madbhaktas Divya Tapasa Dagda Kama Sayomala. A Brahmin observing the great vow of celibacy becomes brilliant like fire, and by serious austerity burns to ashes the propensity to perform material activities. Free from the contamination of material desire, he becomes my devotee. Purport. The process of liberation is described in this verse. Once when Srila Prabhupada was traveling by airplane, a fellow passenger who happened to be a priest told him that he had seen his disciples and found them bright-faced. Srila Prabhupada was fond of relating this incident. The spirit soul is more brilliant than the sun, and as the process of spiritual purification gradually takes effect, even the external form of a devotee becomes effulgent. The glowing fire of spiritual knowledge burns to ashes the mentality of sense gratification, and one naturally becomes austere and disinterested in mundane enjoyment. Among all austerities, the best is celibacy, by which the shackles of material life immediately become slackened. One who is amal, free from material desire, is known as a pure devotee of the Lord. On the paths of Gyan, Karma, and Yoga, the mind retains the concept of personal interest. But on the path of pure devotion, the mind is trained to see only the interests of the personality of Godhead. Thus a pure devotee of the Lord is amal, completely pure. So there's about 6 or 7 months ago, I gave a class, a Bhagavatam class here on the effulgence of devotees. And there's several references to that, but I think in interest of time, I'll just come to this last one. This is Prabhupada Bhagavatam class in Surat, Gujarat. So Krishna consciousness is so nice that naturally it will make you beautiful, not black-faced, not morose, beautiful-faced. That is a sign of spiritual advancement. By the face, you'll understand that here is a man who is spiritually advanced. So, is there any questions or comments? Madan?
One is, I was thinking in the Bhagavad Gita in 18.5, it mentions that acts of sacrifice, charity, that purify even the great souls are never to be given up. And in the purport, Prabhupada says the vivaha, yajna, is one of these sacrifices. So the household or life was done, usually that they have a marriage ceremony or samskar, and it's a sacrifice. It's elevating the person from the mode of passion into the mode of goodness by performing marriage as a sacrifice, which is to please Krishna, yajna, the Vishnu, he's the one. And so I guess that's more of a comment. And then I got something on my phone. My wife.
Was it a comment? Because
yeah,
what I presented wasn't so balanced.
Well,
I mean, it's a fact. It's a super important ashram, but it has to be done with caution, and it has to be done with respect.
Found that a lot of the in the '80s when you were talking about the brahmacharya classes, that
yeah.
Because it wasn't really seen balanced and
right.
appropriate, that people, the movement went through some difficulties.
Sure.
There was also the child situation wasn't
right.
seen as the Prabhupada said, they're your deities, you should take care of them like your deities, you know, your children.
Right.
So a little bit like that, and most of us are survivors. We've gone through those different periods of time. So it was a little bit on, if you don't have any training or any, that good fortune of coming in contact with the devotees that tell you how to live in that situation without it having its toll. But I mean, it is a balanced situation because a little inattention and one can do that. But it's an interesting process going through life with the lower nature, and also by hearing regularly. Now the intelligence is becoming adequate to deal with it. And
yeah, this point that you were making about the problems in the 70s and 80s with kind of an immature understanding of renunciation. And when there was disrespectful dealings, then everything kind of broke loose, you know, in terms of Krishna conscious, you know, modality, Krishna conscious attitudes. So these references that I read, they're not meant for being disrespectful. For instance, where Queen Kunti's playing for to be detached from her family members, you know, this is in the prayers of Queen Kunti. It's not that, I mean, these are exalted personalities, anyway, but it's just this kind of this, I think Prabhupada uses the phrase skin disease. It's detachment from that, but actually respecting and supporting and serving the spiritual identity of the different devotees.
It's actually, if you don't have it balanced completely, then it's the immature or incomplete renunciation, which is basically impersonalism. You don't see him, you don't see the super soul. At that same verse you're quoting, Prabhupada mentions the word via media, the super soul. So your relationship is based on service to Krishna. And I had one other thing that was sent in to me here. It says, is the sex desire really in the heart? Is this how it's related in the books? I thought desires were from the senses, which is the mind. So maybe you could clarify that for our listening audience.
There's a, let's see, Adi 4, there's a verse that's quoted quite frequently in this regard. So it's Atmendriya Priti Ancha Tari Bali Kama Krishnendriya Priti Icha Dare Prema Nama. So the desire to satisfy one's own senses is called lust. The desire to satisfy Krishna's senses is called prema or love. So again, there's a transformation that takes place when one enters the material realm, where the orientation, rather than pleasing Krishna's senses, one has this desire, icha dvesha samutvena dvando mahina bharata. One comes in the material world overcome by the dualities of desire and hate. There's this blue boy with a flute, why can't I do that? You know, it's inconceivable, but we come in this material world and we play act as, you know, I've got my little Radharani and I'm going to just enjoy. And so, but it's something that's, the soul wants to love Krishna from the heart, and then we get this whole facility because we've opted out of that relationship, we've misused our free will, and so we've got this enormous facility, the material body, you know, all of our surroundings, to try and act out. And then when we finally get baffled and achieve enough frustration with our attempts to enjoy separately from Krishna, atato brahma jignasha, we start inquiring, well, what is life all about? You know, so it's the senses are all part of it, but it's a question of the consciousness of the jiva that's been covered, this original love for Krishna has been covered by ignorance. So then this lusty and, you know, all this sex desire, that's where it comes from my understanding.
So sometimes heart and mind are seen the same, and sometimes they're seen separate. It depends on the context that they're, like a person gives his heart to someone, it's usually his mind, it's calculated, but material energy kind of mixes it together.
Yeah, so any other points? So the idea is to come to this platform of dira, you know, for both men and women, and a detachment from sense desire, sense gratification, but wanting to please the senses of Krishna. And so therefore these aren't really restrictions in one sense, but they're giving us freedom from maitunya agar, from the shackles of sex life. Because they really, when you look at it, this one verse that I quoted, pumsa striya mituni bhava mitam, kind of everything expands from that. I mean, we look at our own lives, you know, and that's, we can see. It's not that it's, you know, it's a very positive experience. You know, being a grahasta, if we handle it properly, we can see how this is really what we, what we need to make spiritual progress. Anyway, Madame, any more points? Yeah, from the ladies' side? Yes. Wait for the microphone so that the online participants can hear.
I think you just pointed out exactly the main idea of Grihastha.
Can't hear? No.
Okay. I said you just pointed out the main idea of Grihastha ashram. Because if somebody sees the Grihastha ashram as an open door to enjoyment, that's the first mistake.
Yeah.
And from there, you don't go anywhere.
Right.
So, as you say, it should be a facility for growing up as devotees toward Krishna service, not the contrary. And very often in the movement, we were seen like Maya, people in Maya. That's the wrong idea. Yeah. That's why the people take Grihastha ashram with this sense of enjoyment.
Yeah.
This is the wrong idea.
Right. Yeah, the one is brahmachari beforehand, the male, and becomes upakurvan brahmachari in marriage. So it's basically the same principles. Personally, I found it a lot more difficult to be a grahastha, you know, much more austere. many more challenges of a simple life, you know, as a brahmachari. but, you know, tremendous facility for spiritual advancement if one tries to have that upakurvan brahmachari modality. And but same thing for, but then we see that there's been a very high divorce rate within our movement, and usually the cause of this is not being willing or enthusiastic to follow these principles, because it just creates disturbance. You know, the knots in the heart, you know, that are created by this sex attraction, when there's, it can just, like, I cited the example of these surveys that were done of students before coming into their university to kind of get their emotional IQ, you know, this, get a pulse on, you know, how they're doing in their lives, and wow, you know, they're just more and more disturbance created by this licentious behavior. So there's tremendous value. So the idea is that Prabhupada had is that we would be able to model this, you know, in a proper way, but yet we haven't met with full success yet. You know, it's coming, But that's the principle, you know. We have to really try to please Krishna, not our senses. But then,
I was thinking of the two other aspects of the reality is the Gajendra story, Prabhupada's purport in the Gajendra story. You remember that one, correct? About if you're in your a situation that's better suited for you, because they say too much thinking about renunciations is just the same aspect of attachment. So attachment and aversion, it has that same idea. And then there's the hope that if I simply follow the sadhana here regularly, gradually it takes time for these for it to sink in enough that I actually have the strength. And then you have the 11, 20, 27, 28 verse where if you become attached to hearing and you actually even understand everything, but still you're not able to control your senses all the time. I mean, if you're honest, you see that it's very hard. We're coming from, and we're hoping that the potency of chanting and hearing everything, following the process, then this amazing transformation is going to take place in my heart. I don't know how much I have to do or how much the power of the mantras and the seeing the deities, that's eating prasadam, how much is that going to do? What's going to happen? So it's kind of an experiment. And then sometimes you're not able to somehow or other, you know, there may be an offense, different inattention. It's very difficult. So it's just, sometimes they won't make it. They like the young child that's learning to walk, he gets bumped, he falls back, and he gets back up again. So that verse said that Krishna was talking to Uddhava, it's coming up, the 11th. You know that one, 11, 20, 27, 28 verse?
I don't know it, but I don't know the Sanskrit. But I know the verse. It's significant. I mean, it's basically there's an exclamation by the devotee that I can't do it on my own, you know. I know it's not good for me, sense gratification, but only you can relieve me of this, Krishna. So, but I'm going to keep serving you no matter what. Even...
Yeah, because in those days when they had those strong classes, and it was almost a type of pride, and it was artificial because the time element, now we have the 2020 vision of retrospect, that so many of the persons that spoke like that were really like pulling up their copins with an extra cinch or something, that they changed the colors of their ashram, or they went away completely because they thought it doesn't work. Have you ever heard that one? It doesn't work. I've done it. I tried, but still my senses were so uncontrollable, and they didn't understand the gradual process, so they said it didn't work.
Well, also this, you know, the kind of the mentality of people, oftentimes it was a little offensive. You know, there was one time when all the women were going to be sent to Australia, you know, just so that, you know, the brahmacharis could have their space. You know, I mean, my God. And I was just hearing Bhakti Chaitanya Swami was giving a class in South Africa, and he was talking about how there was a sannyasi in the New York temple that was implementing very, very strict standards, you know, separation. And Prabhupada, he didn't want this. You know, he wanted it to be, you know, there's a principle there, but it had to be
practical
and also congenial for bringing people in. It was, you know, just kind of became like a concentration camp or something like that. but the mood is, and you see when these heavy hitters, practically all of them fell down. You know, the ones that were really pushing this really strong, you know, almost the aversion agenda.
Because I was thinking, you're talking about the parade where there's self-flagellation and they're dripping and stuff like that. So they probably wanted to get the recognition that, look how much blood I have coming out, how austere I am, and then gain a little bit of satisfaction of being honored and think, oh, he's so austere. And it was actually another form of the same sense desire.
And there were some photos of these men that had put knives on their head, and their heads were bleeding. Like crazy, you know?
But they wanted you to see that, so they would be honored.
Good show. Yeah. So there was an element like that of pridefulness. So that pridefulness was reduced, you know. And, you know, there was one sannyasi that was in a really big position, and he, very strong in this way. But then when he came back, he went around and he offered obeisances to everybody and asked them to be forgiven.
So Krishna's teaching us through each situation.
That's right.
There was that one, Prabhupada gave a funny story about that there was a place where renunciates used to always go and chant. And the ladies used to see this and think, I'm going to go there so I can get a very powerful son. I'll get one of them to engage with me and give me a child, and that way I'll have a very high, but it's mixed, because you're getting them to fall down, but then you're going to get that powerful person's seed like that. So the renunciates, they found out how this was going, so they left, and then a bunch of cheaters, they came to imitate the renunciates to exploit the women that were wanting to exploit the men. So Prabhupada excited that as a cheaters and a cheated.
Right. Okay, so I think we can end here. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Arigato.